The aim of our Living with Diabetes podcasts is to share information and inspire, and we endeavour to ensure that the information provided in them is accurate. It's not a substitute for medical or health advice from a healthcare professional who's aware of the facts and circumstances of your individual situation. We always recommend that advice be sought from your GP or diabetes nurse before making any changes to medication or before using any products or services referenced by DRWF. DRWF will not be held liable or responsible for failure to seek competent medical or health advice from a professional who's familiar with your situation. Views, information, or opinions contained in podcasts do not necessarily represent opinions, standards, or policies of DRWF. The inclusion of details about products or services does not indicate DRWF endorsement of them.
Hello and welcome to the latest Living with Diabetes special podcast looking at research supported by Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation. I'm Claire Levy, and in this edition, we're looking at an interesting research project which studies a molecule that controls levels of specific genes and how this influences energy generation and insulin production in beta cells. I recently spoke with Dr. Mark Russell to discover more.
My name's Mark Russell. I'm a lecturer at the University of Exeter Medical School, and I was appointed there in the late 2019, so just before the pandemic struck, which has been a bit of a challenge, certainly. My research interests focus on diabetes, unsurprisingly, but specifically I am interested in the beta cell and understanding the factors that regulate beta cell health, so the things that make the beta cell survive and kill the beta cell, and also insulin secretion from the beta cell. And I look at this under both conditions of healthy conditions and also conditions where of disease, so diabetes.
And you received the Pump Priming 2020 Award. Can you explain what this is?
Yes, so I was very happy to be awarded one of the DRWF's Pump Priming Awards in 2020. This is an initiative that DRWF and as well as other funding bodies deliver. And really what this is a smaller pot of money which can be used for the development of ideas to get ideas that maybe aren't fully formed or aren't fully evidenced to the point at which you can then put applications together for larger awards. So, for example, from research councils.
And the title of your research, can you just tell us what it is?
Yes, it is the my research title for this project was, Is Mitochondrial STAT3 a Novel Regulator of Insulin Secretion?
And so what is STAT3?
Yes, there's a lot of confusing acronyms, but STAT3 is a type of transcription factor or one of a family of transcription factors that exists within most cell types. And these transcription factors are essentially proteins within cells that allow signals from the outside of the cell to be be moved and relayed all the way to the nucleus of the cell, where you get the switching on of genes, which is a process termed transcription. Hence the term transcription factor.
And how is mitochondrial STAT3 different to this?
Well, mitochondrial STAT3 is actually very similar to the STAT3 I just described. So STAT3 is typically rooted to the nucleus, but recent research suggests that STAT3 can be modified at particular locations. And this, instead of rooting it towards the nucleus, roots it instead towards the mitochondria. Now this is so the mitochondria are an important organelle within all cells. They are responsible for the generation of energy in the form of ATP in cells. If you cast your mind back to school days, you'll probably remember the mitochondria as being called the powerhouse of the cells, and this is what they do. They basically allow all those energy demanding processes in the cell to occur. And so what research is telling us from other cell systems is that when STAT3 enters the mitochondria, it actually enhances mitochondrial function and you get an increase in ATP production.
How might this then be important for beta cells of the pancreas?
So we think this might be particularly important in the pancreas. I mean, first of all, this has never been looked at within the pancreas, but the production of ATP from the mitochondria is integrally linked to the secretion of insulin from beta cells. So the way in which this works is that glucose from the outside of the cell is taken into the beta cell, and this is metabolized and moved to the mitochondria where it's used to generate ATP. And this ATP is then used in the process of insulin secretion. So where you get an increase in glucose concentration on the outside of the cell surface, this is then reflected with an increase in this ATP production and insulin secretion. So what we think might be going on in beta cells is that when we have STAT3 present in the mitochondria, we will get an increase in an additional increase in ATP production and insulin secretion via this alternative route.
So in your study, how did you modify STAT3 in beta cells to promote its movement to the mitochondria?
So this was one of our key jobs within the study, one of the key things that we were trying to achieve. We clearly needed to find a way to ensure that STAT3 was, we were able to move it to the mitochondria to then look at what the effects might be there. So as I mentioned earlier on, that STAT3 is modified in a particular region, which appears to be important in driving its mitochondrial transport. So what we decided to do was to explore how we could modify this. So we identified a number of different factors that we could treat beta cells with, which would allow us to increase this modification of STAT3. And we also found a number of drugs that we could treat the cells with that we were able to block this effect. So we're effectively able to switch on and off this modification. And to be more specific as well, we generated additional genetically modified forms of STAT3 using a process called mutagenesis, whereby we were able to generate a type of STAT3 in which the modified form appeared constantly on, or a form where it couldn't be modified at all. And so we were able to use this in a kind of toolkit to then explore what the effect was in the mitochondria of STAT3.
What did you do to assess whether the energy generation and insulin production changes in these cells?
Well, this was the next step that we needed to address. So we needed to understand whether actually getting STAT3 into the mitochondria would have an effect there at all. And to be able to do this, I had to lean quite heavily on my co-investigator on this project, Dr. Kate Ellicott, and a postdoc who was employed to perform all these studies, a very, very talented postdoc in Dr. Josie Robb, both of whom had a lot of experience in the study of the mitochondria in astrocytes, which are a cell within the brain. They utilized this experience and these skills to explore the role of STAT3 in the mitochondria and whether there were changes here, which was an invaluable help. So what Josie did was to use a machine called a Seahorse Bioanalyzer, which sounds rather ridiculous, but I can assure you there were no seahorses hurt in the making of this in this project, which is, it's a shame we didn't use any seahorses. I've got a background in marine biology, but what this machine actually allows you to do is to measure subtle pH changes and changes in the uptake of oxygen in the media that the cells were growing in. And this gives you a whole array of information about what is going on in the mitochondria. And what Josie was able to find was when she increased the level of STAT3 in the mitochondria, we also saw an increase in mitochondrial function and presumably ATP production. Unfortunately, we weren't able to go on because of time restraints to look at insulin secretion in these cells, but we are hoping to conduct these studies later on.
So how could this data generated from the study help in the design of novel drugs which could increase insulin production in people with diabetes?
I think this is often a difficult thing to think about in the context of basic science, because we have these rather abstract things that we do, and they don't necessarily translate that well to a clear understanding of how this is going to have therapeutic benefits. So I think what the best way to think about this is how things have been occurred in the past for other drugs that impact insulin secretion. So we've known about insulin for, well, just over 100 years now. We had the 100-year anniversary of the discovery of insulin. I think it was last year. And since then, we've been able to understand an awful lot about what is going on in terms of how insulin secretion is regulated, the different processes that amplify this and inhibit this. And we've got an awful lot of information there. And that information, all that basic scientific information, has been used to generate a whole plethora of drugs which are used therapeutically in diabetes, to manage diabetes. So, for example, things like sulfonylureas and GLP-1 agonists are both designed out of this sort of basic science understanding of the insulin secretory pathways. So our hope, once we understand exactly how STAT3 is involved in regulating insulin secretion, the factors that impact that modification on STAT3, what STAT3 is doing in the mitochondria, and exactly how it's impacting insulin secretion, similar sort of drugs can be developed in the same sort of ways.
What difference did the Pump Priming Award mean to your career as a diabetes researcher?
Well, I think it's, I spoken earlier on about the role of the pump priming, the role of pump priming as a sort of way to, as a sort of proof of principle generator to get additional grants. And that's certainly one area that we're hoping to sort of develop things moving forward. We haven't quite got there yet. So we have additional work that we're doing around STAT3 to put a sort of larger grant together. But I think as an earlier career researcher, I've only been an independent researcher since 2019. This was my first grant as an independent researcher, which was a huge shot in the arm to my own confidence to be able to say, well, actually, yeah, some of the ideas that I have they're not too bad, and people do actually think that they're worthy of funding. And this is so important for these for us early career independent researchers who we need to be able to show that we are fundable. So in doing this, this allows us to more likely get additional funding, and actually. As off the back of this, I was able to get an EFSD Lilly JDRF grant last year, which funds a sort of related project, which has been really important, particularly at the minute, considering funding has been somewhat constrained with COVID.
Mm-hmm. Really interesting. Thank you. Anything else you'd like to add?
I think it's important to thank the RWF for the strong work that they do in the support of diabetes research in the UK. I think it's so important that this sort of research is funded, and at the minute it's really hard to get any sort of funding. So I'm incredibly thankful for DRWF for funding this work. But beyond that, I think it's also important to thank the people who donate and who fundraise for DRWF, and in fact anyone who does fundraising for any sort of diabetes research, because without that fundraising none of this can happen. So thank you.
My thanks to Dr. Mark Russell for talking to us about his work.
Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation. Staying well until a cure is found.
Look out for more episodes of our special podcast discussing research supported by DRWF and the advances being made. To discover how you can continue to help the charity, together with the latest fundraising events, news and information, it's all on our website at drwf.org.uk. I'm Claire Levy from Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation. Until next time, thanks for joining us on Living with Diabetes.
Living with Diabetes is a Blue Aurora media production for DRWF. Copyright 2024. Diabetes Research and Wellness Foundation. All rights reserved.